Welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast, the podcast that will help you embrace, grow, and be transformed by the transitions of life. Now here's your host, Debbie Ronka.
Welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast. This is Debbie Ronka, your host, and I'm glad that you are here with me today. You know, a lot of us out there suffer every day with pain, physical pain, that just really impacts the way that we live. And sometimes this pain is associated with a loss of health, a diagnosis that we received. And, you know, I always use this podcast to talk about transitions. And this, to me, is the type of transition that I call the sudden loss of health, and how you process that when you get a diagnosis or you're left living a life of pain. And I'm excited to have with me today Fran Garten. She's going to have a lot of advice for us because she is someone who has walked this path, continues to walk it, and helps other women in the process as well. She's a number one best-selling author, a speaker, a body positive personal trainer. She's a pain reduction coach, and she is also a fibromyalgia warrior, and she teaches people to live pain-free. Her passion is advocating for inclusive movement practices, body acceptance, stress reduction, and learning how to love movement. And Fran would say, connect with her, meet with her so you can end your pain forever. Fran, welcome. Welcome to the Transition Bridge Podcast.
Hi, Debbie. Thanks so much for having me here. It's a pleasure.
Oh, I was so excited when I read your story because I have met people in the past that really have suffered with the fibromyalgia. And I think it's something we need to learn more about and hear your story and how you've navigated through that transition in your life and to what you're doing now. So obviously there was a time you were healthy, you were in a different career, and one day you get this diagnosis. So can you take us from there?
Sure. And one day you get the diagnosis, yes, but the time leading up to diagnosis is probably the worst part. It was about a year and a half of pain and undiagnosed, not sure what was causing it, didn't know how to relieve it. It was bolts of electricity shooting through my hands and feet all the time, anytime, waking me up. And when I say waking me up, I was not sleeping. I was passing out from exhaustion. Really just getting through. That's how I was living. I was just getting through. And when we talk about pain, it's very difficult to understand pain that just doesn't go away. So when we think about it, we use a pain scale sometimes of 1 to 10. Mm-hmm. I lived at 15.
Oh my gosh.
On a daily basis. And to the point where when you're dealing with something like fibromyalgia, and there are other conditions that this is also similar with, but everything hurts. And I don't mean my body hurts. I mean, clothes on my body hurt. Sheets touching my legs hurts. Everything hurts. And you can't get away from it, because you don't know what's going on. So, you know, where I am seeing a rheumatologist and getting a diagnosis after you've done all the different tests and all ruled all the things out can take anywhere from 1 to 2 to 3 years. So it was about a year and a half for me before I finally got the diagnosis.
So I know that was going to be one of my questions about all the different symptoms, you know, so people can begin to recognize it. So going back to that time, is it you just started to wake up with pain, or were there other symptoms? Is that why it takes so long to diagnose this?
So there's a lot of information and uncertainty about fibromyalgia out there. And so it really is, in the simplest form, it is not inflammatory. You might have inflammation, but it's not an inflammatory condition. It is in the arthritis family, although it is not arthritis. It is not degenerative in the sense that if I had regular arthritis, osteoarthritis, eventually, you know, the cartilage is going to break down, the joints are going to break down. It progressively gets worse. fibro is not like that in the sense they can't find those things and see those images when you have testing done. And it is a hypersensitivity of all sensory input. So hot is like super hot. Hot is cold is freezing. Lights are extremely bright. Like I wear sunglasses all the time. Like on a cloudy day, I could wear sunglasses because if there is a little bit of sun or a little bit of brightness, it's very, very intense for me. So everything, every sensory input that we get is heightened for people that have fibro because the receptors are alive. They're like hyper, super duper. They're like superheroes.
Oh gosh. But you don't like them.
No. It's not a superpower. I mean, I guess in a way it's a superpower, but you just could change your perspective on that. But you know, the thing about it is that many people say, much research if you read it, is that there's some kind of trauma that happens in your life that is the catalyst for fibromyalgia to actually surface. And so for me, my trauma was I was suffering with massive headaches, vision issues, nausea, and all of that, and ended up, and this was all due to stress, but what happened was I ended up having vision loss in one of my eyes, and I had a migraine, and I was in bed for 4 months. So I had a 4-month migraine and vision loss because of stress at work.
So that was the inducer, because that's what I was thinking about, like shingles. We have that virus in our body, but it's stress induced.
Yes.
And so, and I know my mother had neuropathy. Mm-hmm. And I remember her saying, like, just the sheets touching her body was like so painful. So this fibromyalgia sounds so similar, yet it's like this mystery because it presents itself as one way, but like as you said, it's not in the arthritis family. Or boy, that has to be so difficult to diagnose. So now you're losing one vision, you're in pain, but there's still no connection that this is fibromyalgia.
No, and it wasn't. So after that episode happened, the 4 months passed, my vision, we'll say it kind of comes back. It comes and goes. I even still today, it has flared recently because of stress. And it was probably another almost year after that before I got the diagnosis. And it just progressively got worse. And the thing is that I was an active person and I was healthy and I did it, you know, all the things that you think are the things that you should be doing, you're doing. Your body is moving and I'm reducing stress and I'm trying to take care of myself and all these things, eating well. And still you have this pain that you're not sure where it's coming from and what is causing it to happen. So it really was a very frustrating time. From a medical point of view, you know, I am blessed to have an amazing family doctor because he is very well versed in what he does, but he's also someone who is very open to any kind of alternative therapies. And so if I went in and I'm like, I need a referral for XYZ, he's like, no problem. I'll give that to you. His perspective is whatever we can do to make things better for you and make you feel well, then that's what we'll do. So I'm blessed to have him and other people in my healthcare team that are very open to, yes, go see an osteopath or go see a naturopath or whatever you think is going to work. And I think that's one of the key things is one, having people in your life, whether it's family and friends or your healthcare team that you work with, that are open to trying things, but it's also about you. You have to be open to trying things. And I said this on a podcast, I think it was last month or something, and I'm not advocating this, so please, it's a disclaimer, don't do this. But if you want me to like cut a head off a chicken and run around the block with this chicken head to get rid of my pain when you're in the height of it, I'll do that. Because it's so it's so difficult to understand when you don't have chronic pain that whatever you ask me to do, okay, I'll do that. I'll try that. No problem. But some people are not open to that. And so I would say if anybody who's listening or experiencing, you know, pain or they're experiencing something and they don't really know what's going on, my best advice, open your mind and try everything and give it a fair shot. Like, don't go, okay, I'm going to go for acupuncture and have one treatment. Like, let's be realistic. Let's give it a month. Let's give it a couple of months and actually make the effort to try it and then see, does that work for you? It might not. And that's okay. But you have to, I believe you have to give it a fair shot and truly be open-minded to maybe this is something that could work. Because,
so what I think I'm hearing you say is that there is really isn't a formula. Everybody is going to have their own recipe to find what works for their body to get the response that you want, to decrease this pain, eliminate this pain. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And that's the tricky thing about fibromyalgia. And, you know, when I first got diagnosed, I do what everybody does. You research, you read all the books and you go to all the websites and you join the groups and you talk to people. I had friends that had fibromyalgia and I got told basically, yeah, it's horrible. You're going to have it forever. It's really painful. Take your meds. Hopefully they work. Try some other things. Maybe they work, but everybody's fibro is different, right? It really is. It's very individual. And, but on the flip side of that, I would say there are also many common things that affect the body. And if you're dealing with, you know, inflammation in the body is very, very bad if you have fibromyalgia. Now, fibromyalgia doesn't cause inflammation. It's not an inflammatory condition. However, inflammation in the body creates pain. So as someone who has excessive reception to that pain, then I'm going to feel that more. So yes, it makes sense. Logically, I would want to reduce my inflammation because then it will reduce my pain. Is it the cause of my pain? I don't know. But does it help it? Absolutely. If I can reduce the inflammation. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really like a discovery. But what's going on in your body, and to like try to put everything in its own little box and figure out what's affecting me, I can see why you did so much research. So I want to take you back to that moment. Mm-hmm. And here's where I would love your help with the audience. So all of us, you know, come to that place, you know, we get the diagnosis. I guess in one way, were you relieved that you could put a name to it?
Absolutely.
And then my other question is, how did you begin to process the emotions, the mindsets to, like, as I'm speaking to you, I can sense you're a strong person. So what happened to you when you got the diagnosis and then you realized this is now my life and how I'm going to deal with it? What were the emotions? How did you process your mindset and go through those steps to where you are now?
Yeah. The first thing that I did, which I don't recommend, so that's why I'm telling people, is that I thought that I could do the same things I did before with a little bit of rest, a little bit more rest, or not as intense, or maybe have more time in between. So I wasn't changing how I was living and what I was doing in my life. And I'm talking about activity. I'm talking about mm-hmm. physical movement. And I wasn't really, or, you know, commitments with friends and family and events and things like that. I wasn't necessarily doing less. I would just put more gaps in between them. So if you looked at the calendar, I still was doing many things and I was still very active, but I was like, well, if I just rest a little bit more, it will help. And the big mistake that I made was really trying to see myself as the person I used to be. And I'm not that person anymore. And even from when I got diagnosed, which was over 10 years ago, to how I am now, I'm not the person I was 5 years ago. Even last year, I've changed since then. But you have to really release and move away from the thought process of, oh, I used to be able to blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, but you can't anymore. Maybe it's not about staying in that past mentality and who I used to be. I'm not that person anymore. I'm now a person that has a different diagnosis. I'm now a person that has this pain that I now need to figure out how to manage it. And what I think many times the messaging that we get in society, or at least I got, is you need to push, you need to do more. If you rest, you're weak, you need to be productive. And productive means to produce things. Productive is not resting. Resting is not productive because nothing, I have no tangible product. Mm-hmm. I have nothing tangible that I can say, oh, or like even like, oh, I used to read a book a week. Well, now I don't. Now I read a book a month if I'm lucky. And that's my old me, but this is the new me. But it's still productive because I can say, well, look at the book that I finished reading. And it's not about that anymore. So it's really about shifting what are your priorities and what are the things that are the most important for you to be able to move forward and to manage this pain. And so really not living in the past and not saying that phrase, I used to be able to. Well, you can't. And maybe you can't today. Maybe in the future you will, and maybe you won't. The point is, it's not important. What's important is what you're doing today to make yourself feel well. Does that make sense?
It does. It's, well, it's the letting go of who you were before, trying to embrace this new you, and learning to celebrate what you're able to do. And each month or quarter, you see increments of change or improvement. But was there like a grieving process? Was there a time that you just, you know, had to grieve the loss?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the thing with the grief, if any kind of grief, it's not linear, right? It's, there are the moments where, so I get diagnosed and I'm like, oh, okay, now I know what it's called. Okay. So then I do my research and I'm like, okay, yeah. Okay, I'm not that person anymore. I can't do those things anymore. So then you grieve the fact that you can't do those. Like, there's a lot of tears that are in there. There's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of anger that comes with it. But shifting your perspective on now when I think about things, I go, why don't we see what happens if I do this? And I say this to my clients all the time. Why don't we try this? Let's see what happens. Like, that's a phrase I use. And they, and as a trainer, right? And I teach classes as well. They're like, what? I'm like, well, let's see what happens. And I just say it like that. Like, it's no big deal. And they just sort of look at me. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to show you and let's see what happens and let's see what you do. And they, and at the beginning, they're kind of like, what are you talking about? But when you shift your perspective to let's see what happens, you have no attachment to a success or failure because I'm not looking at, can I do this or can't I do this? I'm like, let's see what happens.
And yes, that's the power to me of mindsets. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I do it and I go, oh, I could do that. Or if I can, I go, okay, let's try something else. So your lack of attachment to that result and that outcome kind of goes away because it's really just a, let's see what happens. It's an experiment. Everything's an experiment. And that's where you are in the journey. And even the grieving, right? The grieving doesn't come, it's not one moment that you grieve. Like when the diagnosis came and I realized I had to change some things, there's a grieving process there. And then you kind of go along and I went, everything was good and I'm getting better and pain is reducing. And then something happens and it doesn't have to be something big. It can be someone says something. You could be at an event. You could see a commercial on TV and go, oh, man, remember when I could? And that thought process comes back, even though I've already let that go and it sneaks back in. And so that, mm-hmm, I think is the thing to know about grief. It doesn't happen and then it's over. There are moments that it resurfaces and those are your triggers, right? And I think you have to be aware of that. And I think that might be where some people run into difficulty, is that they're not really aware. So when I work with clients, I talk about food. Food is a really important thing. And if your gut is healthy, the rest of you is healthy.
True.
And there are foods that cause inflammation in the body. There's lots of research. Now, I'm not saying eat this, don't eat that. Like, you do what is good for your body. And if you pay attention, you know that there are things that are not good for you. Now, I'm going to say sugar is not good for anybody because it causes inflammation. It makes your flesh unhealthy. And then when you move, it causes pain. And that is scientifically proven. So do I eat sugar? Yeah, sometimes. But I know when I do that it could cause a flare. And so I'm not saying never eat sugar or that I never do, but I do know that if I choose that and that's my choice, that it may be that there is some kind of inflammation response in my body and I need to accept that. And that's okay. So you have to think about what are you choosing, because you are choosing when you know that something is going to cause inflammation and it's going to affect, you know, your digestion, or you're going to have trouble going to the bathroom, right? Then you're choosing to have that, even though you know the effect that's going to have on your body. That's okay. That's your choice. But then my thought process is you can't really then blame anybody else but you because you chose that.
Right. It's the decisions that you make. And it's so true. And going back to what you were saying earlier, I was just thinking about the power of our mindsets. When we look at something, especially in a situation like this, if we focus on the difficulty and what won't work or what's impossible, like the doors just stay shut. But if we have the mindset of, you know, how can I get better? How can I do this better? It's just that word how is like a door opener to possibilities. And like you were referring to earlier, Fran, like to be open to what is good for you and for your body. And so I'm looking at all of the different things that you do, because I know you help a lot of clients. You have a course that people can sign up for. And I saw that it mentioned the triggers. So I'm glad that you brought that up. So talk to us about boundaries and what really is like, why do you need to learn to love movement?
Okay. Two big questions. So yeah. Boundaries are really important. And I think because we teach people in our lives what our boundaries are. And what I mean by that is if I'm a yes person and I always want to please other people, that's how I behave. And then you go, well, I know if I need something, I'm going to call Fran because she's always going to say yes. Now, it might not be a conscious thought that you have, but you do it because you know that I'm the yes person and your friend Susan is not the yes person. So she's not the person you're going to call. And so when we have boundaries or we don't have boundaries, what happens is when we start to identify, okay, I'm always saying yes to everybody, which is depleting my energy and increasing my pain and my stress, then we have to make the change. The problem becomes other people. Because I have taught you, Debbie, as an example, that I'm always going to say yes to you. Now, when I'm trying to figure out my boundaries, I'm going to change that. And when I say, I'm sorry, Debbie, I can't help you, I'm going to get pushback from you because I've taught you that I always say yes. And it now is inconvenient for you. And this is where the trouble with boundaries come in. And when we're trying to change them, is the other people around us don't like that. Because it affects them. True. So think about your family and your kids. Like you do a lot of things for your kids, but you know what? Your kids are teenagers. They can unload the dishwasher. They can bring their laundry downstairs. They can put it away. You don't have to do it, but that's the role that you've played for a very long time. And now you're like, nope, I'm not doing that anymore. And now all your teenagers are freaking out because they have to do things. Well, okay. They'll be fine. They'll live. They'll survive. Right. But you have to stand strong by setting the boundary. Sure. And I think that's where the difficulty becomes when we've got to change it, right? So that is something that's really important. And I think people need to really think about, I tell people to sort of make a list. What are the things that you need to do? What are the things that you want to do? And what are the things that you are doing for everybody else?
Mm-hmm. What can we eliminate?
Yes, right? The first two. Those are important, the needs and the wants. And I think the wants should come before the needs personally, because we should live in joy and creativity and happiness, but that's a different podcast episode. But what we're doing for everybody else, that is really important. And I think that we need to think about it from the perspective of you are trying to be healthy and well for the people around you. And if you continue to do everything that you've been doing before, when you're in a situation that you can't, you're not going to be there to help everybody. You are going to be in bed missing out on all the family events and all the friend and gatherings and all of that, because you're going to be unwell. So why don't we put the boundary in place so that on the weekend, I can go out and see my friends and family on Saturday, and I don't have to be in bed for 4 days afterwards. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, it does. Because, you know, to me, the boundaries are all about communicating. Like, we just can't put the boundary up and then no wonder people push back. It's like, okay, the family or friends, we have to have a conversation.
Absolutely.
This is what I can't do anymore because of this is what I'm dealing with. I need you to be in this with me. And this is, you know, boundaries can, you know, be like put people on a defense, but if they understand the boundary has a different purpose, then they'll be like, oh yeah, we're in.
Yeah.
Because boundaries are healthy.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And Debbie, you're right about the communication. Like, this is where, you know, I think that's part of what we've been told, that when I come back to what I said before about push through, keep doing it. You're weak if you say no, or you can't take on everything. You're not the superhuman. Like, there's nothing wrong with that there. And you know what? What my opinion is, if you want to judge me because I'm saying no to something because I don't have capacity for that, that's on you. That's not my problem. That's your judgment problem. It's not mine. I'm good. Like, I know what I can and can't take on, and I'm not going to sacrifice my health and well-being to make you happy or to make somebody else happy. Does that make sense? I mean, obviously, I want other people to be happy. I want to be helpful and caring and all those things, but I also need to take care of me.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know
that
what?
Is something we forget.
Absolutely. And, you know, just reading up on all of this, you know, fibromyalgia is one of those, it's like a hidden disease. It's not visible. So it's not like I can see you with a broken leg and understand your struggle, but because, you know, looking at you, you look perfectly healthy, but the battle rages inside and it doesn't manifest on the outside unless, of course, we see you in bed. So I think we just in general need to have more awareness or understanding about fibromyalgia so we can give grace, understand like that person may look healthy on the outside, but they really can't push any harder than they are. They can't do these things. So I think that's a real difficult, because it's almost like you suffer in silence and people don't understand.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that's why the conversations are really important. And I think I always say to my clients, and even I think about this myself, you know, you are, whatever you're doing, whether that's not setting boundaries or setting them, whatever you're doing, you are teaching the people around you to imitate you. So if you have kids, you have godchildren, you have nieces and nephews, if you're suffering or you're pushing aside your own, let's say, pain to do things for other people, you're teaching the next generation to do the exact same thing. So all the things that I'm working through and that I'm trying to, you know, reduce and take care of, they're going to have to go through the exact same thing because they haven't learned the work, right? They haven't learned how to set the boundaries because I haven't talked to them about it. I haven't taught them. I haven't shown them. They're learning by example. So we are setting an example for other people. And that comes to, you know, your other question about learning to love movement. You know, I use the term personal trainer because people know what that means, right?
It's right.
But if you actually came to work with me, anything that you thought that you were going to do is you're probably not going to do with me because I don't do typical things. I want you to move your body. And that's what I mean by learning to love movement. So there are times I'll have clients come to me and they'll say, today I have pain. And my response to them is, what can you do? What would you like to do? And I've had them say, can we foam roll today? Yes, let's foam roll. Can we do a meditation? Absolutely. Oh, I think maybe I'd like to walk around the gym. Like, I want to walk around your studio. Just walk around. Great. Can you put on my favorite song? Absolutely. What is it? I got Spotify. Like, so move your body. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't have to be a program or a particular way of moving. Now, yes, I create programs for my clients, but it's based on what they enjoy. It's based on the idea of, I want you to move. And so if that looks like 5 minutes of you walking in a circle, and then a meditation or a breathing exercise, then that's what it looks like today. And it's about movement because that's how we're designed. And it doesn't have to be, you know, you're sweating and you want to vomit. And that is not how working out is in my mind anyway. It's just about moving your body in a way that you like. You like dancing? Great. Then you should dance. That's what you should do. I have dance parties every day. I have a Spotify playlist of my dance party songs and I just put them on and I dance around. And I do
love that.
So find something that you enjoy and just cultivate movement. That's it.
So I'm glad you brought up, you know, putting together programs for your clients. So for those that are listening and would want to connect with you because they may have a friend, a family member, or they may personally be one who's suffering. Can you just give us, like, what would a typical session with you look like?
Yeah. A typical session with me, we do some foam rolling. We do some breath work. I do a lot of balancing. Balancing is really important. It's work that we don't do. We forget about it. And as we get older, we need that more than when we were younger. So there's some balancing in there. I'm very big on pelvic floor work because the pelvic floor is a really important part of the body. Again, as we age, we need to make sure that that is healthy and functioning. So there'll be some movement with that. And then we sometimes will do a meditation or just a relaxation at the end with a little bit of breathing. And I like to always end with the thought, some kind of thought to lead you through your day or your week. And that could be something simple as I have a blackboard in my gym in the studio, and to this week it says smile and enjoy. So That's the message for the week.
Do you encourage the women to come in to see you weekly? Do you encourage them to have some type of a routine? And that's, I don't even know if that's the right word for when you, because every day you wake up, it's probably feels different. Do you encourage some type of practices throughout the day?
Yeah, I really do encourage people, and this is where the mindset piece comes in, which is very important. I encourage people to journal. I encourage people to sit with themselves in quiet. And when I say the word meditation, some people are like, I can't meditate. I don't care if you meditate, just sit and breathe. Take a minute and breathe. Just focus on your breath. It's very important. Grounding is very important. Go stand outside without your shoes. Your feet are so important. We got lots of receptors on the bottom. As we get older, they die. So we want to keep them alive and moving. So stand outside. Doesn't matter what the weather is. Go stand outside for 1 minute. You won't die. I'm in Canada. I'm in Ontario. We get like minus 35 Celsius. You can stand outside for 1 minute without your shoes. You'll be okay. So things like that are really important. So it's more, you know, some clients see me once a week, some twice, some three times. It just depends on what are their goals and what is their capacity. You know, I have a lot of clients that have fibromyalgia. Once a week is all they can do with me. Half hour session with me is a lot for them. That is a lot. And for some of them, then they need other days to recover. And I don't want them to come to me and then they're recovering for 3 days. That's not what I want. So that's why when they're with me, we'll see what's going on today. Like, how are you feeling? Like, what are we able to do? And for some of them, it's not, they're great. And other people, when they're first diagnosed, I find, don't really know what is their capacity. I feel great today. And then they do it. Well, then they're in bed for 3 days. So because you feel good, and that's the thing I would say, because you feel good today, that's wonderful. But that doesn't mean that tomorrow will be okay. So instead of doing 100% today, why don't we back it up to 50%? Even if I know you could do more and you know you can do more, let's rein it in a little bit, because I would much rather you be functional and not in pain for the next week by pulling back to 50% rather than doing 100%. Does that make sense?
Yes. It's like you're protecting your reserve.
Well, yes, because you only have so much energy and you only have so much capacity. And where are you in your day? That makes a difference too. Sometimes an end of a day workout is very different than a first thing in the morning workout. Right.
That is true. That's true. Yeah.
And so you have to really, and this is where, you know, when I talk about triggers and knowing your body and listening, you really need to pay attention to what is happening. I have more energy in the morning. So my mornings are full. Like, I stack my mornings. because my afternoons are very empty, because I need that time, because I do not have the energy in the afternoon. So it is very rare that I have a lot of things happening in the afternoon. It's just not my capacity. And I'm fine with that. I never used to be fine with that, but I am now.
Yeah.
To resist.
I know you probably know this quote, but this quote reminds me of you. So I'm going to read it. I never knew pain until fibromyalgia knocked me down. And I never knew strength until I got up. Yeah. I am a fibro warrior.
I love that.
I love, you know, the time that we've spent together, and I just know you've shared so much valuable information. And I always love at the very end for my guests to just have a conversation to whoever's listening right now that maybe feels hopeless, discouraged, just don't know what to do next. Can you just speak to their heart?
Listen to your body, I would say. And don't do things for other people. Do things for you. It's very important. And it will pass. It will pass. It just might take some time. That's the thing that I think the biggest problem that I had and many people have. We want it immediately. It takes time. Your body took many years to get where you are. It probably took you many years before a diagnosis. So you're at the height of it. Just hang out at the top of the mountain, enjoy the view, and then slowly make your way down as you come towards your wellness. It's a journey. You'll get there.
It is a journey, and I'm glad that you kind of described it that way. And every day is just a new experience, a new opportunity to really dig deep. It just sounds like every single day. And so it sounds to me like having community and having a coach like you who really is walking it with you, understands what's coming and the detours that you could take. So I will have all of your contact information in my show notes, but if you want to just say real quickly how people can connect with you. And I also know you have some YouTube videos for people to check out.
Yes. Yeah. The best way to connect with me, you can follow me on Instagram. It's Fran Garten Pain Coach. And I love to talk to people. Message me. If I can help you in any way, I'm here to help you on your journey, because really living in pain is really difficult. And having a chronic condition, it's going to ebb and flow. And there will be times that it's going to be this big open ocean of life. And you're going to be like, this is fantastic. I feel great. And then there are other times it's going to be horrible because you're going to have a flare. And that's okay. Like, that's the thing. It's okay. It ebbs and flows. So just go with it. And I do have a lot. I do have a YouTube channel. It's just Fran Garten. You can find me on YouTube. I have tons of videos, tons of content there. There's exercises. I teach Qigong. So there's some Qigong videos there. It's a great gentle movement practice. So there's a lot of things out there. Just open your mind, ask questions, and find people to walk with you.
Fran, I can't thank you enough for coming on today. I just, everything that you've shared, I know is bringing hope and just practical steps for people who are really suffering, you know, with this disease. And for all of us, for what we're learning to be more aware, more sensitive, more encouraging, and to be more of extending grace and a hand to say, how can I help, instead of trying to push the person to do more. I know I learned a lot listening to you today, and I want to thank everyone who comes in each and every week. You know, you're the Transition Tribe. We always come each week to embrace, grow, and learn to be transformed through the purpose and the power of the transitions in our life.
Thank you for joining us today on the Transition Bridge podcast. We appreciate you. If you enjoyed listening today, please go ahead and subscribe or review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to check out the show notes. And for more information about Debbie, go to debbieronca.com. That's debbieronca.com.